Hey everyone, welcome back. Ever wondered just how far you can actually go with protest speech, before you land yourself in trouble with the law?
Oh, yeah.
Well, today we're going deep on a Supreme Court case, Hess versus Indiana.
Okay.
This one really gets into the limits of free speech, especially when it comes to protests. We've got court opinions, we've got legal analyses, the whole nine yards, and we're going to break it all down.
You know, what I find so interesting about this case is how it gets right to that line, that tension between the First Amendment and, the government needing to keep things orderly. It's a classic legal tug of war.
Absolutely. And this all plays out at Indiana University, 1970.
Oh, wow.
Vietnam War protests are going strong, tensions are running high,
Yeah.
and you've got a group of demonstrators blocking traffic.
Okay.
The local sheriff shows up to try to, well, clear things out a bit.
Right.
And this is where Gregory Hess comes in.
Okay.
So the sheriff is walking by, and Hess shouts, "We'll take the fucking street later." Or maybe it was, again, it's this outburst, loaded with emotion.
Yeah.
And just like that, boom, arrested for disorderly conduct. But before we get too far, what does disorderly conduct actually even mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's one of those, kind of vague charges, almost like they could use it for anything.
Right, exactly.
Generally, I mean, it's about behavior that, like, disturbs the peace or is likely to start a fight.
Great.
But the real question here, the big one, is did Hess's words actually cross that line?
All right, so let's get into the legal weeds here. His statement, it wasn't the most polite thing to say, but was it a call to like immediate action?
Right.
I mean, he said later, that implies something happening in the future, not right then and there.
Exactly. And there's this other crucial detail. Hess was actually facing away from the crowd when he said it.
Interesting.
So, was he really trying to get the protesters to immediately take back the street? Or was it more like, just letting off steam, a comment, venting a bit?
Right, like yelling at the TV when your team loses. You're not actually going to run onto the field, right?
Exactly. But even with those nuances, the lower courts actually upheld the conviction.
Seriously, even though he wasn't directly telling people to do anything illegal right then, that seems pretty harsh.
Yeah, it really does. It just shows how tricky these free speech cases can be, Luckily, the Supreme Court agreed to hear the case. They saw those big First Amendment questions right away.
And this is where it gets really interesting. So a few years before this, the Supreme Court had established this imminent lawless action test in Brandenburg v. Ohio.
Right.
What's that all about? Can you break that down for
Yeah, sure. The Brandenburg test, it's got two main parts. First, it looks at whether the speech was aimed at inciting, like, immediate lawlessness, not just advocating for something illegal way down the road.
Okay.
And then the second part is whether that speech was actually likely to cause that immediate lawlessness. It's about a real immediate danger.
So, like, I could say, I think we should overthrow the government, and that's probably fine, right?
Yeah, probably.
But if I say, let's grab our pitchforks and storm the Capitol right now,
Yeah.
then we've got a problem.
Exactly. You got it. And this is where Hess's case gets really interesting. Was his statement, "We'll take the fucking street later," truly directed at getting people to break the law immediately? Did it create that real and present danger?
I mean, it's definitely provocative, but there's that later there that seems to mess up the whole incitement argument.
Right.
So what did the Supreme Court say? Did they side with Hess?
They did. They overturned the conviction, said that his statement, however crude, didn't pass that Brandenburg test for incitement. And they really focus on that word later, emphasizing that just talking about illegal activity in the future is very different from inciting immediate lawlessness.
So they were basically saying you can't punish someone for wanting to do something illegal in future, as long as they're not actually telling people to do it right now.
Exactly. Think about it. Political protests, they often involve demands for change, even if that change might mean bending or breaking some laws.
Right.
If the government could just punish anyone who spoke about potentially illegal actions in the future, well, they could shut down a whole lot of political dissent.
That would really undermine the whole point of the First Amendment, wouldn't it? I
Yeah.
mean, what's the point of free speech if you can't even voice your discontent or advocate for change?
You got it. That First Amendment, it's there to protect unpopular or even Yeah, offensive speech.
Right.
As long as it doesn't cross that line into directly inciting imminent lawless action.
Okay, so the court ruled in favor of Hess, but was there any pushback? Did any of the justices disagree?
Oh, yeah, there was. Justice Rehnquist wrote a dissenting opinion.
Okay.
He argued that the majority, they were basically second-guessing the trial judge, the one who was actually there.
Yeah.
You know, saw the scene, heard Hess's statement.
Right, right.
Rehnquist felt that later could have been interpreted as just continuing what was already happening, you know, implying a more immediate threat.
So this dissent brings up that tricky question of how much weight appellate courts should give to what lower courts decide.
Yeah.
Like, who really gets the final say on the facts of the case?
Exactly. And that debate about the role of appellate courts, it's still going on today. But for us here, the important thing is the majority of the Supreme Court, they sided with Hess. And that set a really important precedent for free speech rights.
Okay, so we've got this fascinating legal back and forth.
Yeah.
But why should all this matter to someone who's not a lawyer or a legal scholar? Why is this, what, 50-year-old case about some guy yelling at a protest? Why is it still relevant today?
That's a great question. You know, those principles from Hess, they still have a big impact on how we think about protests, about free speech, about limits on government power, the imminent lawless action test. It's not just some old legal concept. It's a vital safeguard for our First Amendment rights.
So give us some real-world examples.
Yeah.
How might Hess apply to what we see happening today, say, with online activism, social media, all that?
Well, think about all the heated rhetoric and the calls to action we see online every day.
Oh, yeah.
Hess reminds us that the government can't just silence dissent, can't just arrest people because they're worried about some future unrest. There needs to be that clear and present danger, that imminent lawlessness, for speech to lose its First Amendment protection.
So it's not enough for the government to just say, well, this person's posts make us nervous. We're worried they might lead to trouble later on. They have to show that there's a real and immediate threat to public safety.
Exactly. And that's especially important now with how protests and online activism are often met with really quick and sometimes really harsh responses from the authorities.
Right. It's like if someone posts, let's march on City Hall next week and demand justice. Is that protected or is that inciting imminent lawless action?
Well, based on Hess, that statement, it would probably be protected. It's a call to action, sure, but it's planned for a specific time in the future. It gives authorities time to prepare to ensure public safety.
So Hess provides this crucial safeguard, making sure people can voice their grievances, advocate for change, without being afraid of getting arrested just because their words might upset some people or raise concerns about potential trouble down the line.
Exactly. It really emphasizes that the government can't punish speech just because they disagree with the message or they fear it might lead to unlawful action sometime in the future. It's about protecting the free flow of ideas, even when those ideas are challenging or uncomfortable.
Yeah, it really comes down to like intent versus immediate impact. You have the right to express your views, even if they're not popular, even if they, you know, ruffle some feathers.
Right.
But the moment those words translate into an actual clear and present danger, that's when that protection comes into question. So Hess sets a pretty high bar for the government if they want to restrict someone's speech based on, you know, some potential harm down the road. It's not enough to just say, oh, this might lead to trouble eventually.
Exactly. They got to show that direct link, the speech, and a real threat of that, that imminent lawless action. Can't just be, you know, speculation or vague fears.
Okay, so Hess gives us this framework for understanding when protest speech might actually cross that line.
Right.
But have there been other cases where courts had to apply these principles, like real-world examples where Hess was the precedent?
Oh, there have been. And it gets even more interesting when you see how they're applied in different situations.
Okay.
One that comes to mind is NAACP v. Claiborne Hardware, decided in 1982 by the Supreme Court.
Okay.
This case involved a boycott of white businesses in Mississippi.
Okay.
Organized by the NAACP in response to racial discrimination.
So we've got another protest case here.
Yeah.
What happened? Did someone say something that was considered inciting?
Well, during this boycott, there was Charles Evers, a really prominent civil rights leader.
Okay.
He gave this powerful speech, warned those who weren't participating in the boycott that they would be ostracized socially.
Okay.
Used some strong language, too. Things like, if we catch any of you going in any of them racist stores, we're going to break your damn neck.
Whoa. Okay. That's some intense rhetoric. Definitely not mincing words. I can see how that might have raised some concerns about incitement.
Yeah, it did. Some argued that his speech went beyond protected speech, that it was a direct threat of violence, maybe even inciting immediate lawlessness.
Right.
They pointed to the, you know, the break your neck comment as evidence that he was trying to provoke violence.
So we have a super tense situation, boycott, racial tensions, a leader using really strong language.
Yeah.
Sounds like a perfect recipe for a First Amendment showdown.
Absolutely.
What did the court decide?
Well, citing Hess v. Indiana, they ruled in favor of Evers and the NAACP.
Wait, really? They sided with Evers?
Yeah.
Even with the break your neck statement, how do they justify that?
The court emphasized that you can't just take those words out of context.
Okay.
You have to look at, you know, the bigger picture. Evers' statements, even those about breaking necks, were all part of this broader political movement.
So they were saying that his words, while strong, they were part of a larger message about social justice and racial equality.
Right, exactly. It wasn't just about random violence.
Okay.
And they concluded that his speech wasn't meant to incite violence right then and there.
Hmm.
They saw it as like passionate advocacy, not a direct call to break the law immediately.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a difference between saying, we're going to fight for our rights no matter what, and, you know, go attack that person now. One is a statement of principle,
yeah,
and the other is a clear incitement to violence.
Exactly. And the court in Claiborne Hardware, they recognize that protest movements often involve strong language, emotional appeals. To silence that kind of speech, they said, would be to, you know, chill political activism, prevent people from speaking out and demanding change.
So they basically said you can't just shut down a protest because some of the language used is making people uncomfortable. You have to consider the whole message, the context of what's being said.
Precisely. And that's, I think, the big takeaway from both Hess and Claiborne Hardware.
Yeah.
The courts have said over and over that the First Amendment protects a wide range of expression, even when it's unpopular, provocative, or uses, you know, strong language.
Doesn't that create a slippery slope, though?
I mean,
where do we draw the line? What's to stop someone from just saying anything, even if it's potentially dangerous? And then hiding behind the First Amendment.
That's where the idea of context becomes so, so important. We can't just look at the words themselves. We have to think about the whole situation, the speaker's intent, who they're talking to, the overall atmosphere.
Right. So it's not just what's being said. It's about who's saying it, where they're saying it, why they're saying it.
Yeah.
All that factors into whether it crosses the line into actual incitement.
Exactly. And that's why these cases can be so hard to decide.
Yeah.
There's always going to be some subjectivity.
Right.
What might seem dangerous to one person could be protected speech to another.
Like those optical illusions where one person sees one thing and someone else sees something totally different. Same image, different interpretations.
Exactly. And in these cases, the courts have to be the referee, trying to figure out if what was said really poses a threat of immediate lawlessness.
So they're looking for that tipping point where passionate advocacy turns into a real and present danger.
Yeah.
Like, you can be mad, you can criticize, you can even use strong language, but as soon as you tell people to break the law right now, that's where you cross the line.
That's the heart of it. And it's a line that we as a society, we're always grappling with.
Especially with social media, right? Everything moves so fast. One tweet, one post, and it can go viral, reach millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like that adds a whole other level of complexity to these First Amendment cases.
Absolutely. The internet it's created these incredible new ways for people to speak and to be activists, but it's also blurred the lines between private conversations and public pronouncements.
Right.
Something that might have been a private rant among friends, now it can be shared with the whole world in seconds.
Right. You might think you're just venting to your buddies, but suddenly you're an influencer with thousands of followers taking your every word seriously.
Exactly. And that makes it really, really tough to judge the impact of someone's words, to figure out if it's just speech or if it's incitement.
So a social media post, even one that, you know, uses strong language, expresses violent fantasies, maybe it wasn't meant to incite action at all.
Right.
Maybe the person was just blowing off steam or being sarcastic.
Exactly. But how do you figure out what they really meant when you're dealing with online communication, which is so, so fleeting and temporary?
Mm.
That's a real challenge for the courts.
It's like trying to decode a secret message,
yeah,
or read between the lines of a text. You don't always have the context or the background to really understand what the person meant.
Right. And that's why courts are constantly having to adjust how they interpret the First Amendment.
Yeah.
To keep up with technology and how we communicate, it's a moving target.
So the facts of a case like Hess v. Indiana, the Vietnam War protest, that might seem old-fashioned.
Mm.
But the legal principles, they're more relevant than ever. We're still dealing with those same questions about free speech in a world where protests and activism and political arguments are happening more and more online.
Absolutely. In cases like Hess, they give us a framework, some principles we can apply to these new ways of communicating. They remind us that context matters, intent matters, and protecting free speech means understanding the connection between words and actions in a nuanced way.
So it's not just about saying you can't say that.
Right.
It's about understanding the complexity of speech, the context, the potential for harm. It's about balancing free speech with public safety.
Exactly. And as we move deeper into this digital age, that balancing act is only going to get harder and more important.
It's like we're all navigating uncharted territory, figuring out how to apply these really old ideas about free speech to a world where the rules of communication are changing all the time.
That's a great way to put it. And that's why it's so crucial to understand cases like Hess v. Indiana. They give us a foundation, some legal guideposts to help us navigate all this complexity.
Well, we've covered a lot, the twists and turns of Hess, its impact on protest movements, online activism, the future of free speech online.
Yeah.
But before we wrap up, I want to go back to something we touched on earlier, that dissenting opinion in Hess.
Okay.
We talked about Rehnquist's argument that the court should have gone with the trial judge's assessment, but there's another part of his dissent I think is worth exploring.
Yeah, there's more there. Rehnquist was also worried about what the majority's decision could mean for public order. He thought that by focusing on the later in what Hess said, they were creating a loophole. A loophole where people could incite violence or disruption as long as they framed their calls to action as something that would happen in the future.
I see his point. If you know you can get away with inciting something just by saying it'll happen later, that could make people a lot more reckless with their words.
Exactly. Rehnquist didn't want a precedent where people could hide behind the First Amendment to disrupt the peace. He argued that they had to consider the context, you know, the emotional intensity of the protest, how Hess's words might embolden the crowd to do something immediately. All of that needed to be considered.
So he was saying free speech is important, but there need to be safeguards against people using it to incite violence or create chaos.
Right. He was worried about a situation where the First Amendment becomes a shield for a reckless or dangerous speech. He argued the courts needed to be more careful. Think about the potential consequences of inflammatory rhetoric, even when it's phrased as something that will happen later.
So how do we balance these concerns? How do we protect free speech without letting people incite violence or disrupt things? Seems like a tough balancing act.
It is. It takes careful consideration of everything. The words, the speaker's intent, the chance of immediate lawlessness, the potential harm to public safety. And we have to do all this while still upholding the First Amendment.
It's like we're trying to solve a complicated equation, and the variables are constantly changing, especially with technology evolving so quickly and how we communicate always changing.
Exactly. But cases like Hess, they give us a framework, some principles to guide our analysis. They remind us that protecting free speech isn't about defending every single thing someone says, but about carefully thinking about the context, the intention, and the consequences.
So it's not about saying you can say whatever you want. Who cares about the consequences?
Right.
It's about understanding that free speech comes with responsibilities.
Yeah.
And those responsibilities become even more important when words can spread so quickly.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that the line between protected speech and incitement, it's not always clear cut. There are going to be gray areas, cases that need really careful examination and thought.
It seems like we have a lot to figure out as we deal with these complicated issues in the digital age.
Yeah.
But at least we have cases like Hess v. Indiana to give us some guidance to remind us about the balance between free speech and public safety.
Absolutely. And it's a balance that requires constant attention, open conversations, and a willingness to change how we understand free speech as the world changes around us.
Yeah, it's like we're always adjusting, trying to make sure free speech doesn't become a way to incite harm. But we also don't want to like shut down dissent or stop important conversations just because they make people uncomfortable.
And a tough balance, for sure. And Hess v. Indiana really highlights that. It reminds us that even when things are heated, even with strong language, the courts are going to look closely at the context, the intent, before deciding if someone crossed the line from protected speech to incitement.
And as we've seen, the courts have been pretty consistent in protecting even provocative or offensive speech, especially when it comes to protests.
Right, because protests are often about, you know, shaking things up, pushing boundaries, expressing disagreement in ways that might make some people uneasy. It's kind of the whole point, right? To disrupt things and demand change.
Exactly. And if we start shutting down protests, silencing disagreement, just because some people don't like the language or the message, then we're in trouble. That's not how a democracy works.
No, it's not. You need that space for those different voices, for the people challenging injustice, pushing for change. And Hess helps make sure those voices can be heard, that people aren't afraid of being silenced or arrested just because their words might be seen as disruptive or controversial.
But this protection comes with responsibility too, right? It's not like protesters and activists can just say whatever they want, no matter how dangerous, and then use the First Amendment as a shield.
Absolutely. Hess is a strong defense against, you know, overly broad restrictions on speech, but it doesn't give anyone a free pass to incite violence or act recklessly. Protesters, activists, they need to be strategic, thoughtful about their message.
So they need to be aware of the power of their words and what might happen as a result, especially in a tense environment.
Exactly. And they have to understand the difference between passionate advocacy and crossing the line into incitement.
So how can they find that balance? Any advice for protesters and activists to make sure their speech is protected while still getting their message across?
It's a balancing act, no doubt. But some things to keep in mind are: be clear about your goals, your intentions. Focus on advocating for specific changes, not just venting anger. Avoid direct threats or calls for immediate violence.
So channel that passion, that anger, into a constructive message focused on the change you want, not just the frustration you're feeling.
Yeah, exactly. And think about where you're speaking, where you're sharing your words. What's okay in one situation might not be okay in another.
Good point. Like, something you say at a rally might not be appropriate for a social media post, or the other way around.
Exactly. And remember, the courts have consistently said the First Amendment protects a wide range of expression, even stuff that's unpopular or offensive. So don't be afraid to speak your mind, challenge injustice, demand change. Just do it in a way that respects the limits of protected speech and avoids inciting immediate lawlessness.
Well said. That's a powerful reminder that the First Amendment is there to protect even the most controversial or uncomfortable speech, as long as it doesn't cross that line into inciting violence or chaos.
And it reminds us that finding that balance, protecting free speech while maintaining order, it's an ongoing challenge. It requires us to be engaged, informed, and ready to deal with those gray areas where the line isn't so clear.
Well, we've explored a lot today, Hess v. Indiana, the impact on protests, online activism, the future of free speech in this digital age. But before we go, what's the one thing you want our listeners to remember? The big takeaway.
I think the most important thing to remember is that the First Amendment is a powerful tool. It protects dissent and helps make social progress. But it's not unlimited. We all have a responsibility to use our right to free speech in a way that respects others and doesn't incite violence or chaos.
It's a powerful reminder that free speech isn't absolute, and that our rights come with responsibilities.
Exactly. And as technology keeps evolving and our understanding of free speech is challenged in new ways, cases like Hess v. Indiana will be essential. They'll remind us how important it is to protect even unpopular or offensive speech, as long as it doesn't cross that line into incitement.
This has been such a fascinating and complex issue, one that we'll probably be debating for years to come. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Hess v. Indiana. We hope you found it informative and made you think.
It's been great exploring this case with you.
And to all of you listening, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep the conversation going.